This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The prophet we're going to be learning today and next week is the whole story of Dinah, the rape of Dinah and the consequences of that. There's a precursor to that that I want to look at, which is at the meeting of Yaakov and Esav. So you remember Yaakov stole the brachos from Esav, then he fled to the house of Laban. He'd been living with Laban for 20 years, and now decides to go back to his hometown and prepares to face Esav. He hears that Esav is out with an army to kill him. He sends gifts to Esav. He appeases Esav successfully, and then he approaches Esav with his family and introduces his family to them. In that meeting, and again, all I'm touching on is where women come into the picture. Vayisores Einov, it says, and Esav lifted up his eyes, Vayar es hanoshim ves hayeladim, and he saw the women and the children, Vayomer mi elelof, and he said, who are these to you? Are these your children? He just couldn't believe that Yaakov had put such an enormous family together. This is chapter 33, verse 5. In a few moments, but right now we're in. We're up at 33, verse 5. Vayomer, and he answered, Hayeladim asher chonan Elokim misaldecho. These are the children that Hashem has given your servant. And the Shefachos, that's Bila and Zilpah, the two maidservants who had married Yaakov, drew near, they and their children, and they bowed, introducing themselves to Esav. And Leah and her children then came up, and they bowed down, introduced themselves to Esav, and withdrew. After that, Nigash Yosef and Rochel v'ishtachavu. Yosef and Rochel then came up and they bowed down. What's the question?
Why are they bowing down?
They're bowing down to introduce themselves to Esav, and in a sense they're criticized for that, for bowing down to Esav. And that's why Binyamin, who was not yet born, but Rochel was pregnant with him, is the only one who can fight Amalek. Because he was the only one who never bowed to Esav. Esav, Amalek is descended from Esav, and all the others had submitted themselves to Esav in this bowing down. They had appeased him to a point which the Torah regarded as going beyond the necessary, and therefore they lost their capacity forever to be able to be victorious over Esav, except for Binyamin, and that's why Mordechai comes from Binyamin, and Shaul came from Binyamin. It was this episode that in fact laid the foundation for Binyamin's capacity to overcome Amalek, and the rest of us is incapacity. That we always have and do bow down to Amalek. And you remember I explained to you that Amalek are not the Arabs, and Amalek are not the Nazis, Amalek are the Americans and the British and the French, and they're mixed up around us. Amalek is our society. That's where we're living in. It's something that is mixed up in throughout society. It's not a group of people. It's not a nationality. It is a culture that places more emphasis on results achieved through no matter what means, manipulation and marketing and all the things that run our lives. That's the Amalek influence. And our ability to stand up to that, to stand up for truth in the face of the power of illusion, is something we lost when we bowed down to Esau. Binyamin never bowed down to Esau, and Binyamin retains that ability to see through that. So yes, the bowing down is one interesting element. But what else is interesting in terms of the personalities? Yeah, yes, very good point. Dinah, is in the box, and I'm going to come to that too. But you're absolutely right. You're right. No, absolutely, literally, Dina's in a box. She's not mentioned here. And we'll discuss in a moment why and the consequences of that. Yeah, absolutely, Dina's in a box.
Anything
Let me tell you that Dina was in a box. It's interesting, the parts of the Torah that get around. That's the that is so.
I
didn't tell you why she was in the box.
Yeah, well, you did. I just
What else? And I'll come to Dina being in a box.
Who came first?
Yes, who came first? The first, the servant. So that order one can sort of understand. So he sends the servant, then he sends Leah, then finally he sends these. And it's from there that we have the principle of Achron, Achron, Chaviv. You leave the best to last. But there is that thing comes from there, that these favored ones came last. Yes, very good. Did you learn that too, or did you just put
none
of it? Very good. But in all the other cases, it says the mother and their children, Leah and her children. And then came Yosef and Rachel. Doesn't say Rachel and Yosef. Why is Yosef put before his mother?
What?
Mother. Yosef and Rachel. Why is Yosef put before Yosef's mother? Rachel was Yosef's mother, right? And Rashi asks that question. And he says, "B'chulon ha'imahos nigoshes lifnei habonim." In all cases, the mothers came before the sons. About Barakel, Yosef nigash lefonehel, but in Yosef's case, he went before his mother. So Rashi is saying that this indicates, in fact, the actual order, that they didn't walk next to each other. In all cases, the mother walked first and then introduced their children. In this case, Yosef went ahead, and Rachel came in after. We were worried about you.
I didn't know.
I was concerned that you didn't know. I was concerned about you. Not at all. And Rashi answers, oh my, an interesting approach of Yosef. Imi yifastra, my mother is very beautiful, says Yosef. Shemo yitle bo enov oisei rosho. Unless perhaps that wicked man, Esau, will, now first I'm going to translate this the way I think most people would translate it. Do you have a Rashi translation there? No, I think we just got the Rashi, not the translation. The way most people translate it, and then I'm going to translate it literally. The way most people would translate it, I think, is, and I fear that this wicked person will take a liking to her. Emot kenegdo, I will stand in front of her. He makes himself a mechitza between Leah, between Rachel and Esau. He does not want Esau to see his mother. Ba'akvenamil histakabo, I will prevent him from seeing my mother. Okay, now, the difficulty with that translation is, and what's going to happen? The interaction is momentary. Rachel is not going to land up running off with Esau. She's happily married to Yaakov. What exactly is he worried about is question number two. Number one and number two is, how is he going to prevent it? And if he's standing in front of Rachel, if Esau is really so attracted by women, what's going to stop him from looking around them? Is one person standing in front of another going to make it impossible to see? And therefore, I'm going to translate it literally. Shema yitlebo enov, lest he suspend his eye on her. I will stand before her to stop him staring at her. You see the difference? And what he's worried about is not that he'll see his mother, that's not the thing. Suspending his eye on her. What would be so terrible about that? I'm not going to answer that question yet until we get to the Dina episode. Just let's stick with the question. So Yosef has taken on a view. Yosef was perhaps one of the most broad-minded of the sons. When you think of Yosef's life afterwards, and Yosef's whole, the colorfulness of Yosef's character takes a very fundamentalist approach in this interaction and wants to prevent any possibility of eye contact between Esau and Rachel. And he does so knowing that she's beautiful, and because she's beautiful. That's point number one of where this episode links into the dinner episode. The next one is the box issue. Yeah, so you're quite right about the box. And I just want to try and see if I can work, show you where it's worked out from, but she's in a box. Right, it says here. Vayachom balaylaru, just before this episode, he woke up in the night. This is Yaakov. Vayikach eshtei noshov, he took his two wives, eshtei shibchosov, and his two maidservants, the es achad osor yelodov, and his 11 children. Who are the 11? Everybody except Binyamin. Where is Dinah? And he crossed the river. Says Rashi, v'dinah hecha noisa, where is Dinah? Binyamin, when I was not yet born, so the 11 sons has one daughter. Where is his daughter? Nesama b'teva. He put her in a box. The Noah before now, and he locked the box. Shelo yitein bo Esav einal, so that Esav would not see her. Okay, now this is a different phrase. Yitein is einal, and Rashi used a different phrase for Rochel. There he said yitela bo einal, suspend his eye on her. And here Yaakov was afraid that Esav would. Yitein bo einal means apply his eye to her, would evaluate her. Is that a good thing that Yaakov did, or a bad thing?
It was a good thing, but he seemed to realize that that she didn't have the character, that she didn't have the sneeze as Rachel.
Why?
Because she may project herself, which happened later.
So he thought the only thing he could do is lock her away. Because is that what you're saying? Because if she and Asa saw each other, something might happen,
well,
and he didn't want that.
Not that much, but at least he couldn't. He really couldn't completely trust her.
Okay. Judy?
He could have locked her away,
roughly, because he was that concerned about particular women in his family.
Why only her? She took after Leah,
her mother. So that would tie into what Mrs. Carney is saying, that he was worried that there would be a link, that she would in fact enjoy Esav's attention, and that would be a problem, which would justify his doing this. In other words, it's not as if he locked all these women away. He didn't say, you know, men and women must not see one another. He wasn't a Muslim. So only his daughter, only Dinah, he did it with. And Mrs. Khan is saying, because we see that there was something in Dinah that was quite flirtatious and outward, and he recognized that and was worried about that, which would justify his actions to some degree. Well, the question is, let me carry on with Rashi, because you're stepping ahead a little bit. And Rashi says, "Ulekach Leah Nash Yaakov," and Yaakov was punished for this.
For putting her in the box.
Yes. Why? Shemanaal me'achiv, because he was interfering in a natural man-woman dynamic. Who else was he not going to marry? It's not as if there was a whole selection of eligible Jewish men. The closest that there was Esav. At least Esav was the son of Yitzchak, the grandson of Avraham. How bad was that? So he was interfering in the natural man-woman dynamic. And if you say, yes, but Esav was a bad man, Shema Tatsirena Lamutov. You don't know. Maybe Esav would have turned out good if he married a good wife. So he was playing God. He was interfering in a natural dynamic that he should have let play out, trusting that if that's what happened, then God wanted it that way. It's not as if it was an illegitimate marriage. It wasn't as if it was a marriage that couldn't take place. Esav wasn't a good man, yes, but maybe she would have brought him around. The Notlo Biyad Shechem, and the result of that was she landed up with Shechem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she landed up not with Esav, but she landed up being raped by Shechem. And that was the consequence. Now, we've mentioned previously that one of the consequences of her landing up with Shechem was her inheriting some of Leah's traits. So there are two elements now that are feeding into the circumstance of Shechem. Of course, at the end of the day, her landing up with Shechem had something to do with her own issue.
Yeah.
and it's Shem's issue. They have they remain responsible for it. It's not as if one can say that things happened that were beyond their control. We don't believe that at all. But we're looking at what created the circumstance. What created the circumstance was a certain behavior on Leah's part, some of which was attributed to parental conduct. Leah being an outward person, and that was part of her personality, good and bad, and Yaakov locking Dinah away. And how did that act out into the Shechem affair? That must have made her more rebellious. She must have always wondered what she was missing in Esav. It must have made her even more curious, and not cured anything in Dinah at all. So Yaakov is criticized for this. The question that is sometimes asked to punish Levitt and others ask the question is, but why was he punished so badly? At the end of the day, wouldn't any father do that? Not lock in a box, but you know, if there's a really bad influence and you're worried about a connection with your daughter, and you know the man's rotten, he's evil, he's wicked, surely you would make some effort not to bring them into contact with one another. What's the terrible thing that he locked her up? So even then, what is the terrible thing? And that's the real issue.
Her to stay away? Instead of locking her?
He couldn't, because it was all open. They were traveling. There was no staying away anywhere. So he had to put her in one of these trunks. He had to put her in something that there was nowhere to lock her up. Where did he have to lock her up? So, or to tell her to hide or to stay away. So there was no alternative. And the Chaim Shmuel was just to ask that question. What is it? What did he do? So wouldn't any father? Well, the question is, not trusting her, and I'm going to come back to that also when we do dinner. So I'm asking two questions. The one is Yosef's action in keeping a distance between Rachel and Esav, where clearly there wasn't an issue of trust on his part. He's talking about her beauty, not her trust. Dinah, and we've raised here, although nowhere else has it mentioned the issue of trust, but that's that impact on Dinah and Shem. The what the Chaim Shmuel Levitt used to say was there was just a little bit too much energy, and he used to act it out. It was very beautiful. He said, "I had to put it away in the box and close the lid." But he knocked those nails in with a little bit too much energy. There was almost a pleasure in depriving Esav of dinner, and that's what he's criticized for. He's criticized for the enthusiasm with which he did it. There should have been tears rolling down his face when he did it. He should have been sad that he's got to do this, the pain that's causing Dinah, the opportunity that's being lost to Esav. He should have felt suffering and pain, and he felt some kind of joy of deprivation, and that's what he's punished for, which is interesting. But the issue of what they're worried about in both cases gets a little bit more clear as we get into the Dinah episode. Now let me read you a few verses from the Dinah episode, and then we'll begin the analysis, which we'll begin this week and continue next week. Say Dinah bat Leah, and Dinah, the daughter of Leah, went out. We discussed previously why the daughter of Leah, not the daughter of Yaakov. Ashiyod or Yaakov, who she bore to Yaakov, Liris Bivnosa Oretz, and to see among the daughters of the land. So she went out to visit the women, not to visit the men. By Yaros of Shechem ben Chamor, Achivi Nesi Oretz, and Shechem ben Chamor, Achivi, his name is interesting, Shechem, okay. Son of Hamor, which is a donkey, Hachivi, which is a snake. Interesting names. The prince of the land. So this was not an ordinary man. This is the prince of the land, the chap of the area. By Yikach Reisor, And he took her. Vayishka v'yisor v'ya'aneho. And he slept with her and raped her. Batid bat nafshoi bedino bas Yaakov. And he fell in love with her. And v'yehav es hanaro. And he loved her. V'yedaber alev hanaro. And she spoke to the heart. And he spoke to the heart of the girl. Interesting that na'aro is spelt without a hey, which means that without the vowels it would be na'a. Just bear that in mind. Na'a meaning a boy. Na'a is a girl. Na'a is a boy. So referring to Dino as hana'ar, na'aro, as the boy, the girl. Vayomer Shechem, and Shechem said to Hamor, his father, I want to take this young girl for me as a wife. Yaakov heard about it. They engage in discussion. We'll go into all of that. At the end, the brothers go in. And they make a deal with Shem, and they say, well, we can't marry you. You're uncircumcised, society. Our daughter can't marry you. But if you and your whole community will have a bris, then that will be okay. So they get the whole community brisked. And when they're suffering in the pain, Shimon and Levi come into the town and they wipe them out. And they kill Hamor and Shechem. Vayikhu es Dino mibeis Shechem vayetzeyu. And they took Dino from the house of Shechem and they went out. Now, whenever you use the word vayikach and he took in reference to a person, what do you think that implies in the Torah? Yes, there was resistance. In every case where it says, and he took, and it's talking about a person rather than an object, there is an implication of a need for persuasion that the other party is not willing. So the way Chazal read this is, and they dragged her out of the heart of Shechem. So interesting what's happened. It started off as a rape, but it ended off as something that she was fully committed to and wanted to stay in. Let's do a little bit of material on that. Two views as to why she wanted to stay in it. Vayikhu es Dino, Rabbi Yudin Omar. In the Medrash, Rabbi Yudin says the following: Goyderin bo v'yotzin. They had to drag her out and go. There was no, this Vayikhu, no willingness on her part. They had to drag her out and go. Why? Omar Rav Huna explained, Haniv eles l'orel koshe lo lifresh. Very interesting statement of Rav Huna. Sex with an uncircumcised man is much better.
That's what they say on the radio,
sir. Do they? Well, it's true. And that she didn't want to be with a Jewish man after that.
Well, how would she know that?
Yes, how does she know?
It's a good question. But I think it's not so much as a comparison, but that the sexual contact was so powerful that was it as far as she was concerned. Which is a really important comment in a woman of Dino's caliber and what role that played and how that played. But there's another element to it.
Excuse me, sir, you said earlier that he broke to her heart, so somehow
yes.
She had earlier made some kind of psychological
connection. Well, so there have to be two stages in the seduction process. The first stage is to get the woman to agree to sex. And the second is to ensure that the sex is so good that she doesn't want to leave. And that's the seduction process. Yes, he succeeded in getting her to agree and in having a physical relationship with her that was so satisfying that she didn't want to sacrifice the loss of that. It's not really a correct word, because if you look at the wording, it says Vayikach oiso, he took her. Vayishkav oiso, he slept with her. Vayaaneho, and he oppressed her. So the rape in fact is third, which means it wasn't a rape. Exactly that. You see, actually, it's another, they call it the rape of Dino. It actually isn't. It's the seduction of Dino, resulting in rape. Now, the resulting in rape, so the question is, what was the Vayane? Where was the Vayane at all? Now, the one answer I would give to that is that because the rape in Hebrew, there are a number of different words for rape. The one is la'anos, which means to... what would be a good translation for an earnest, something beyond your control, a So it's not the violence which is the important part of it. What the important part is that she has no choice. That's when the word anos is used. It's more than a threat, it's the to do something to a person over which they have no control to.
Violate.
It's not even the violence, it's compulsion. It's a kind of compulsion. Inui, which is the other word, the word used here means affliction. It's the same word as we use for Pharaoh in Egypt. And it's used here unusually because that's normally not the word for rape. So normally the issue with rape is the deprivation of choice. That being the case, and I've always said there is a very small distinction between seduction and rape. In our society, of course, there's a major distinction because our society, violence is almost the only sin. Left in Western society, the only moral sin is violence. As long as you're not violent, two consenting adults can do anything. So the only problem is when it's not consenting, when there's violence. But if you look at rape not as from the point of view of the violence, that is a part of it, but then it should be treated like any other act of violence. Part of why it's so critical is the element of the removal of choice. And the element of removal of choice is something, again, which modern feminist society won't accept, and that is that it is relatively easy to remove the element of choice from a woman. You don't have to be violent. There are much more subtle ways of doing it, and that's called seduction. So you want to say, yes, but does that mean that you're taking away responsibility from the woman? No, you're not taking away responsibility from the woman, but the responsibility of the woman is allowing herself into the situation in which she can become prone to seduction. That's the point at which she has control. Once she's past that point, she actually does not have control. If there's a basic attraction, if she doesn't find a man attractive, then she won't. But if there's a basic attraction, then it is possible for the man to force or rape the woman without any use of violence at all. The use of alcohol is there's no violence in it, but it's as forceful. It's as deprivation of free will. If you've got the combination of an atmosphere with an attractive man and a bit of alcohol, there's not much difference between that and rape other than violence. But in terms of deprivation of free will, that's already taken place. So all you can say is, you should not have been there, young lady. You should not have been in that bar that night. You should have not had anything to drink, or you should not have been with that man. But you can't say you should not have gone to bed with him. That's just a sin up, because by that time, that's too late. So if you look at all the barriers that are placed by halakha, it's to try and prevent the woman from getting into a situation where she no longer has control, where she can no longer be held accountable. The only point that she gets held accountable is long before that. So from that point of view, it's understood. It says, by Yikacha Yisrael, he persuaded her. He seduced her. By Yishkava Yisrael, he had relations with her. Then by Yanel, then she was raped. Because by that time, she had no choice. She was in a relationship that was so attractive to her that she had no choice. Would she have chosen it at the beginning? Never. Had she been asked a year ago or a day ago, would you like to get together with this prince of this town called Shechem ben Hamor? She would have said, absolutely not. He's not Jewish. He's from a different culture. I didn't have anything to do with him. So her conscious decision is no. And here she lands up hours later in a situation where she won't leave him. What's happened in the meantime? Her mind has been played with. She's been worked into a situation in which she should not be. Why? Because of his actions. And that's why it's called the rape of Shechem. And you're right, it's not because there was violence and there was rape. There wasn't that at all. There is, Rashi brings another view, that the Vayaneh is that their sexual relationship became quite violent and violationary later on. But that is a different view, and we don't really need to pursue that in terms of the line that we're taking.
It says here of a note from the Lord of Mayan that no one came to be in a place of pleasure or pain. But if there was no violence, then she wouldn't have been seen. So is this wrong, or...
Now that would be taking the view that it was a rape, or taking the view that afterwards there was violence in that relationship, but that's not the view that we're taking in terms of the Chazal that we're learning. The simple view is this: so it's called the rape of Dina, and that way it conveniently removes responsibility from Dina. But when one analyzes Chazal and one sees that she was responsible, that she did go where she shouldn't be, and yes, she went to visit the women, but she got herself into situations there. Now we'll see how Shechem did it. Some say she never went to visit the women even. The preacher, Rabbi Lezer, said, how did he do it actually? How did he get her? He says, Hevi mesacha kois na'arois chutzolot metzoyfe fois betufim. He brought dancing girls outside the window, and she stood and looked at the music and the dance and the tufim drums, so it was sensual, it was rhythmic, it was, and later we know what kind of person she was. So he tuned into the kind of thing she liked, provided that, and then obviously she went down and joined in the dancing. Any girl, and she joined in the dancing, and once they were there, just come over to our place, and we'll dance some more at home, and she goes off with them, and that's how he got her out of her own environment. It wouldn't have happened in her own environment. The other reason that she had to be dragged away that we're given is Rabbi Yerucham, who says, how strange must have been the house of Shem to the daughter of Yaakov. Can you imagine a cultural gap bigger than that? It's almost impossible to imagine how far, and this is cross-cultural marriages and things that one sees today, and okay, there's enough information about different cultures, but this, the home of Yaakov, and they are traveling, they've just come here, there was no contact or familiarity at all. Shem knows nothing about God, he knows nothing about mitzvah, he knows nothing about Avraham, he knows nothing about Yitzhak, he knows nothing about their history, he knows nothing about their value system. A total cultural schism between the two. How unbelievably foreign it must have been for him. What was it? So he answers in this for name is there, Kama Godel Kachapitu, see the power of production. That there is something that a woman can be open to that defies all logic. Vayedaber alei vanaro, and that he links in Judy to what we said earlier, that he spoke to the heart of the girl, is what he links into, not their sexual relationship, but his ability to access her. Sheloi rak taskim lishon, not only that she agreed to stay, ela shetzorech legoiro mishon, but that she had to be dragged out after such a short period of time, in such an alien environment. But that is the power of that type of relationship into which she found herself. And again, there comes a point beyond which she loses control and finds herself drawn more and more into something which is totally foreign to her. And yet even in that very foreignness, there's a kind of attractiveness that he's been able to access, and a desire for her to be part of that, and her wanting to stay there and needing to be dragged up.
Did her father know she was going to want to stay, and that's why they decided to kill him?
We'll come to the showing you that she wanted to stay. They had to drag her out. She
ended up
picking
up
Stephen. No, they killed her. They killed him first. And we'll go into the reasons of why they killed him. No. Now, another very important element to play to this mystery is the Alshik. The daughter of Leah. Why is she called the daughter of Leah? The Alshik gives a very original reason for that. Normally the daughter of Leah, because Leah was the one who went out to meet Yaakov, and she had this outward quality and that quality, etc. Alshik says something else altogether. Do you remember what part Leah had?
Leah had originally supposed to have the boy.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Leah was going to have a boy. And what happened?
She switched it because her heart was so good.
She prayed, right? She prayed that her son should be turned into a daughter. Because she didn't want to cause problems with the sister and so on. So Leah davened for a girl instead of a boy, and she turned into a girl. Mitapcha mizocha in the cave, the nishar bo mitevo hazocha. But masculine elements stayed within her. She was part boy, part girl. She died to the face, and that's why she was so outward, and she wanted to go out. She was adventurous, she was exploratory, she was, there was that part of her, that's part of what her nature was.
And she had 11 brothers.
And she had 11 brothers, which there are times there, correct? Absolutely. And there was this very male. And we see from this that a girl who grows up in Yaakov's house, with that lineage, and that environment, and that kedusha, that sanctity, could land up as willingly as Shem's wife because of those qualities within her. Just the Torah just says alerts us to the dynamic and to the, you know, the quiet little maid who stays at home and all that. So that's easy to handle. You find her shidduch, you marry her off, that's the end of the story. But that's not how all girls are. And there is a quality. This now ties into what you wanted to say earlier, Mrs. Khan, that Yaakov recognized that in Dino and was concerned about the Ace of Dino dynamic. But bearing all this in mind, what was Yosef worried about now when Rachel was introduced to Esav? Considering this whole dynamic, what was the fear of Yosef now?
Esav was powerful and amazing.
Incredibly charismatic and handsome and unbelievably attractive.
Maybe knowing that, he thought, my mother's wonderful, but she's only human, and maybe my father, or you have to divide his attention.
Yeah, I would suggest that what he was worried about, not that that Rilke would run off with Esau, that wasn't even, yeah, you could say if you want to take it really far, it could happen to dinner, it could happen to anybody, but I don't believe that's what he was worried about.
Esau was like
that he might stake her out, but something even more subtle than that. They might never see each other again. That Esau was sufficiently skillful to make sure that Rilke would never forget that look. And that could ruin her marriage. And Leah and Yosef realized that the dynamic that there could be between this attractive woman and that charismatic man could be so powerful that her relationship with Yaakov could be fractured. And one begins to see here the fragility of this relationship, of the man-woman relationship, and the power of it. On the one hand, it is something so powerful that no matter what you do, these things can happen. On the other hand, it can be something fragile with an external force, just a look. Can cause that permanent breakdown, which is worrying. It's concerning, and these are realities that one deals with. And what about Yaakov putting Dina in the box? Might be the same thing. Might be that he knew that they wouldn't land up together. Dina might not have been the kind of person Esau wanted. Esau might not have. Well, maybe we see later on. Who knows? Maybe Dina and Esau would have got on very well, and that's what he was worried about. But certainly, even if it wasn't that Esau's way with women was such that it would spoil Dina's capacity to ever find satisfaction with a nice Jewish man after she'd been exposed to a glance from Esau, and that he didn't want that either. What happened to Dina at the end? What was the end of Dina? And next week we'll fill in the gaps.
You mean about her daughter?
What happened to Dina ultimately? Dina falls pregnant.
And her daughter married Joseph.
And Dina's daughter is?
Osnah.
And who is Osnah?
Potiphar's wife.
Potiphar's adopted daughter. And who does she marry? Yosef. The whole thing coming back. And that whole marriage is the result of the interaction between that strained relationship between Potiphar's wife and Yosef. So when you start realizing the amazing male-woman dynamic, that this string of stories, starting with Esau in the background, behind Leah, who doesn't marry him but could have, Dina, who doesn't marry him but could have and maybe should have, Rachel, who doesn't see him, and if she would have seen him could have got into trouble, the whole Shechem-Dina relationship, Osnat coming out of that, going to Egypt for reasons we can also discuss next week, landing up in the house of Potiphar, Yosef and Potiphar's wife establishing a dynamic that becomes dangerous, not only from Potiphar's point of view, but we know very well as we learn when we get there that Yosef had full intention at one point to have an affair with her, does not do so, but marries her adopted daughter instead, and out of that comes Yosef's lineage, which leads ultimately to one of the Mashiach powers, and the Mashiach is descended from that relationship too. So an amazing weaving of personalities and sexual innuendos leading to the lineage of Yosef, no less intriguing than the one that leads to the lineage of David HaMelech, where you've got the daughters of Lot, and you've got Yehuda and Tamar, and you've got Ruth and Boaz, and you've got David and Bathsheba, and all of these interesting relationships leading to Mashiach ben David, and these interesting relationships leading to Mashiach ben Yosef. There are going to be two Mashiachs. There's a short period of Mashiach ben Yosef, and then the period of Mashiach ben David. And we'll fill in some of the gaps and get into some detail next week.